All right, welcome back. We're up here. I don't know why. We got kicked out very unceremoniously. So thank you for accommodating. I'm hoping there's not a bunch of people sitting down there waiting for class to begin, but I guess I won't know. So maybe at the break someone could go down there and check it out. In any case, welcome back. This is CS354, which I will now show you. We're going to do day two today. And we're continuing our quest to get from basically where we were last time, which is where we just introduced a little bit of C, and everything seemed more or less obvious, right? Like you have comparisons and numbers and expressions. All that stuff is going to seem basically kind of like obvious if you've seen any sort of programming before. Today we're going to continue on the obvious path for a little while, and then we're going to start veering off into the dark world of C. And we're going to start seeing things, if you haven't done a lot of C programming, that you probably haven't seen, or if you haven't done any, certainly you haven't seen. And by doing that, like I said, our whole goal here is going to be to understand how to program in C and be a good C programmer and to have the right mental model of what we're doing when we program in C, as well as understand what's going on at the machine level. Okay? And then somewhere in there we'll take a break and talk about other stuff, but right now we'll just kind of get into it. So let's just do a quick review of where we were last time so that we can remember just quickly what we were doing. And I guess, yes, if you're coming in late, if you sit over here, you are unnamed, and if you sit over there, you should choose carefully because you're stuck with a name that's already pre-assigned to your seat. So, you know, look at the name, pick one that looks good for you. Okay, so what we were doing last time is what we were looking at were, well, we looked at basically how a computer works. And we said there was this CPU, and we won't spend a lot of time on this, and we said there was this memory. And, of course, there's a bunch of other things, too, like hard drives and keyboards and mice and graphics output displays. We're going to ignore that for now. So we're going to mostly just focus on this part of the world. And what we talked about the CPU doing was, repeatedly, when your program is running, something very simple. It would fetch an instruction. Sorry, I have to warm up my hands. Then it would decode it or figure out what the instruction does. And then it would execute it. In other words, perform the instruction like an add or whatever. And then basically it would get... It would basically, let's just kind of simplify this and say you would just repeat this process. So in memory, we have a bunch of instructions, and we just kind of start stepping through them and doing work. And we could talk a lot about that, but that's the basic idea of how a computer works. Great. Then what we looked at were things like the notion of a bit. Everything in the computer, of course, is going to be represented as ones and zeros. This means at some point we have to get comfortable with that notion. That means when we represent a number, it's going to be represented as ones and zeros. When you represent a photo in your computer system, it's going to be represented in some way as ones and zeros, etc., etc. String, oh, document. Everything is just ones and zeros. And so you have to get a little bit used to that and be comfortable with it. On top of that, we looked a little bit quickly at the abstraction of memory. It's a very simple abstraction. And what all the memories that you deal with on modern computer systems are what we call byte addressable memories. A byte, of course, is 8 bits. And all a memory is a bunch of slots which we can address, which we can refer to by number from 0 to the size of the memory. So we can refer to each byte. So let's say we want to refer to just one bit. Let's say we want to change one bit, but we have a byte addressable memory. What would we do? What do you think the processor does, or a program running on the processor does, when we're just trying to update one bit, but we have a byte addressable memory, that the smallest unit that we can read or write is one byte at a time? What are we going to do? Sorry? Yeah, so what's the first step of a bit mask? What are we going to do first, like on the processor? What are we going to do? We're going to bring the data from memory, right? And then what we're going to do is say maybe update on the processor in some way, and there's instructions to do this, and we'll talk about those instructions later. We'll update that bit that we're interested in, and then we'll write it back out. That's called a read, modify, write. So anytime you have any sort of storage device or memory device that has a fixed-sized unit that you can access it in, if you have to update a smaller bit of that, you kind of have to do it a little bit inefficiently. You have to bring the whole thing in, the byte in this case, update the part you want to update, and then write it back out. Fortunately, most operations we deal with larger amounts than a byte, so this works fine. So that's a memory system, very simple abstraction of where we were before. And then what we're trying to do now is go towards understanding C at some level. Remember, our goal here is to never use characters on the screen in our code unless we understand what those characters are. We don't want to be guessing. We want to understand very precisely what all the characters mean that we see in text. Unfortunately, that means if you just wanted to show a Hello World program, you have to understand so many different things that starting with that, I think, is a poor way to start. So we're just starting with very basic things and building up from there. What we saw last time was we started with whole numbers, or what we called integers. And that went pretty well until we realized that in C, a cint isn't a perfect representation of a mathematical integer. In fact, it's a very limited way of representing an integer. In fact, in C, mostly integers usually are 32 bits, or what we would think of as 4 bytes. That's a cint, which is not a math integer. And we saw this divergence, that when we operate on cints, we're constrained to 32 bits, and that means weird things can happen if we try to represent or add two numbers together that are very big, that we won't get a number that can be cannot be represented in 32 bits. Now, why does C do that? Like, for example, if you bring up Python, for example, and you multiply two very large integers together, it'll kind of work. Python can represent arbitrarily large integers to the limits of the computer system that you're on. Why doesn't C do that? Why does C give us this, in some ways, broken abstraction of an integer? Why is that? Space could be a reason, but it's not the primary reason. You're right that it's an efficient representation of an integer, and most of the time that's fine, but that's not the main reason. What's the main reason that C wants to give us these limited ints? If it's not, I mean, there's only two answers you can give almost to everything. There's space or there's time, right? Time is the other thing. So it's time, it's efficiency, right? What C wants to do, and what the answer is going to be to almost every question of why did C do this, it's because C wants to expose the efficiency of the hardware to you as the programmer and then let you deal with it. And then on top of that, you could build, for example, your own abstraction of a perfect, more perfect integer, and then you would have to build that yourself. It's like you can think of it, if you're an object-oriented person, as a class. Of course, C doesn't have classes, so you'd have to build it as functions and structures. But that's up to you. What the C gives you is what the machines expose, and what machines expose in general are very fast operations on sizes like 32 bits or 64 bits, etc. Okay? So our goal with C always is efficiency and control. And that's why we see that kind of behavior, but that's why you have to be very careful, because you kind of look at it and you're programming at first, you're like, this is fine, it's going great. And then when we add two big numbers together, it suddenly becomes negative because it wraps around or overflows. And that, of course, is not what you expect and can lead to all sorts of bugs, security problems, etc. Okay, so any questions about that? That's all from last time. Make sense? Okay. So, by the way, I'm going to try to label this as this will be very unceremoniously or unsurprisingly called slide one. They're doing audio recordings of this, or so they claim. What I will then do is I'll scan these in, my notes that I take during class. I'll then make the audio available. And then, of course, you can suffer through class as many times as you want, as opposed to just this one live performance. I would almost guarantee that it's worse in the repetition, but It's a resource for you if you happen to check out for large periods of time, or you're out of town, or you're sick, or whatever, it's bad weather, or you have something better to do. I will try to make the audio recordings plus this available. It's a little bit tricky because I switch back to the laptop sometimes, and I don't quite know how to interleave all of those things, but we'll figure out. I'll have some sort of artifact that I'll produce that you'll be able to look at. Okay, great. So that's where we were going last time. I'm going to try to figure out how to do this exactly. Okay, good. Now we are on slide two, or page two. And then what we started getting into, something a little bit more interesting. You can have numbers and expressions, but if we don't have named containers or variables, we can't really do anything very much interesting. So we saw how to define an integer. And we're just going to do integers for a long time, though today we're going to break out of that eventually. We're going to start looking at other data types, but we're going to do integers as long as we can to learn some of the very basic concepts. An integer is just a named integer or a defined integer like this, like x, is just a simple way for us to call some chunk of memory the size of an integer, which would be 4 bytes on virtually every platform. It's just a way for us to say in memory, hey, I want those 4 bytes there, and I want you to treat it like it's a cint. Of course, we could refer to it in another way. Maybe this is, we could refer to it by address, right? This might be an address, for example, hex, whatever, BFF7C008, or something very unfriendly like that. And of course, you would understand that if you're trying to write programs and you had to remember things like, make sure to store that data at BFF7C008, that would not be a very friendly program to read. In fact, you would probably decide that computer programming wasn't something that you wanted to pursue. So what we're doing with variables is we make it much easier. We name them, and we call them things that make sense. Here we call it x. Of course, in a real program, you call it something more meaningful. Great. But without variables by themselves need a little bit more. They need an assignment. Assignment is just the equals operator. This is an operator, just like we saw other operators, and we talked about precedence. I'm not really reviewing that here. Well, it'll come up again. We saw operators like this, times, divide, remainder, plus and minus. And what we need to do to be able to put data in the container, in the memory location that we want, we need to have assignment. Assignment is pretty simple. You have on the left, you have a container, a named container like x. You have the operator here, and then on the right, you have some sort of C expression, followed by, say, a semicolon. Pretty easy to understand. It's also an operator means it's a binary operator. It means it has two things that it takes, two parameters, and those parameters are on the left, a container, on the right, any sort of C expression. So we talked a little bit about that last time, and of course, what that does when you say something, for example, like x equals 10, it's telling the language that you want to put the value 10 into this location. And of course, I can't write 10 there now anymore because I covered that up, but that's where we'd write those bits that represent 10. And of course, we can also do things like say, let's say we have another int, y, for example, we can say y equals x plus 20. Y, of course, is somewhere else in memory. And when you say y equals x plus 20, that means we're going to read x into the processor, for example, add 20 to it, and then store the result over here, which would be 30. So you have to have a very literal representation in your mind, a model in your mind of when I'm talking about integers and I'm talking about variables, I'm really just talking about places in memory, somewhere in the space that I can address, what I'll sometimes call my address space, is where I'm putting those things. Okay? And I don't have to worry about the addresses anymore. Okay, so any questions about that? That's very basic, hopefully, and hopefully makes sense. I'm going to keep coming back to memory because in a minute, or actually in an hour, we're going to start looking at memory very carefully when we're doing some very interesting things like calling functions or kind of generally dealing with function call. It's going to require us to have a much better model of what's going on in memory. So we're going to build towards that today and then get through it. Okay. Thoughts? Questions? Make sense? Okay. So that's, I'll stay on this page actually. Okay. So, what we were just kind of ending with last time, all this stuff should, it kind of seems, it almost matches what you would expect if you were designing a language yourself, right? You'd like, of course I'll have variables because that makes sense. Of course I have expressions. And then we started to build up towards making more interesting programs. Right now, our programs that we can write so far just have a bunch of expressions. Like you could say x equals 10, then you could say y equals 20, or then you could say z equals x plus y. And that's not a very interesting program, right? It's just one statement after the next. Straight line code, sometimes people call it, because you know when you start at the top, you know you're going to just go through the bottom. You're not going to do anything interesting with what people would call the control flow of the program. So this is statement 1, statement 2, statement 3. And when we think of what I called last time very briefly, I called this thing the C abstract machine. At the lowest level, the processor is fetching instructions, machine-level instructions, decoding them, executing them, like we talked about at the beginning. But the way we want to think about a C program is a slightly higher level of abstraction. So what we're thinking of here is that C, when we start running this code, is it starts here at the top. You can think of this as like we can call it maybe a C instruction pointer or something like that, or C statement pointer. This is my own terminology, not some standard terminology, but I think it's good to think about just how does a program control flow work. And we start with this statement, evaluate it, then we go to the next statement, and then we go to the next statement. And that's how the program essentially runs, right? And of course, each statement has rules about how you operate inside of it based on operator precedence and all that stuff we talked about before. Okay, so let's go to start doing some slightly new stuff. Oh, I guess we ended last time on comparisons. Comparisons are at the heart of decision-making in programs. For example, you might say, if this number is greater than something, do this. If it's less than something, do that. We're going to get to that today. But we have to understand comparisons. So to understand comparisons, first we have to understand Boolean values in C, which are logically true or false. And then how C represents those, unlike some languages which actually have a Boolean type, classic C represents Booleans as 1 or 0. And really what that is not just 1. Any non-zero is true, and 0 itself is false. Okay, so when we can evaluate, then we can have an expression like this, 3 greater than 2. And what that evaluates to, when you evaluate that expression, is 1. That's true. Right? 3 is greater than 2. And of course, there's operator precedence. We can string together very long versions of this. We could do something like this. For example, you'll see this in code all the time. Let's say if A is greater than 10 and say A is less than 20. I guess we didn't talk about that yet. We want to be able to express things like, did we talk about that last time? I don't think we did we? Okay, great. So we want to be able to express more complex comparisons, for example. And to do that, we're going to need a few new operators. So let's talk about those briefly, and then we'll get back to that example there, which I really wanted to get to. So we need some new operators, and these are called logical operators. And this is all based on what's called Boolean logic. And, or, and not are the ones we're going to be interested in. And this logical operators, this Boolean logic was developed a long time ago by, not surprisingly, this guy named Boole. Interesting story. If you've been following in the news, there's all this talk about machine learning and AI, right? Everywhere you look, somebody's doing something amazing with machine learning. A lot of that is based on something called deep learning. Everybody heard of deep learning? Is anybody like a deep learning expert in here? So I can say anything then. That's great. So anyway, what deep learning's about. Anyway, there's a person at the University of Toronto for many years named Jeff Hinton, who is one of the main people behind deep learning. And it turns out that his great or great-great-grandfather is George Boole, who invented Boolean logic. So apparently that's a smart family. That's what I got out of that story. So anyway, from years ago, smart people invented things like true and false and how to combine them. Now they invent deep learning. So it's kind of a harder world to live in. You have to come up with more stuff. So what is Boolean? How many people are like really familiar with Boolean logic and how Boolean operators work and things like that? Okay, good. So we'll just go over this quickly. When we think about Boolean operators, what they do are they combine these. The first two here, and or, are what we call binary operators because they take two values and produce one value. And then this one is a unary operator. We often think about them in terms of truth tables. So let's say we have two inputs, like to and we have x and y are our two inputs, and we want to say what the and output is. Well, we can just enumerate all the possibilities like this. And, of course, and is only true if both of its inputs are true. So and is false in this case, false, false, and then only true here. Or is only false when both of its inputs are false. So if either one is true, this is not an exclusive or, it's an inclusive or, if that makes sense to you. And then, of course, not, we can just kind of do not over here. If we have not only has one input, and if it's false or true, the output is true and false. So those are our basic Boolean operators. And how they're represented in C, remember all Boolean values, I'll think about them as trues or falses, but they always are zeros or ones. This is slide 3. Is it 3? Yes, sorry. they're always represented as zeros and ones. And what I can do with these Booleans, with these logical operators, are combine them with, say, comparisons and make larger scale logic statements. Like, for example, only, like in the program, I want to say maybe only if A is greater than 10 and if A is less than 20. And you can see here I'm using these two ampersands, which is not very, I don't write an ampersand very well. That's like a three with some lines on top of it and below it. That's my ampersand. You have to know that because that's how I write it. And that's going to be an and. Now for or, we have, I should do this on a new piece of paper. I'm running out of room here. So we have and, we have or, and we have not. And we're going to represent that as in C programs as two vertical bars as an or, and not is a just an exclamation point, or if you're an old Unix wizard, people sometimes call that a bang. But that's how we represent them. Now, you have to be very careful. There's something else that looks like this in C code that we will get to later. They are bit operations, bit-level operations, and they are single ampersand, single or, for example, single line like that. Do not do those for logic operations, okay? Sometimes it'll look like it's working, but it won't be the right thing. Make sure when you're doing logical and, it's two ampersands, logical or two vertical bars, and then the bang would be fine. Now, to understand this a little bit better, of course, they have precedence as well. I'm just going to start showing the full precedence chart here. I don't know how this is not super readable. I'll make a link to it on the web page so you can look at it. The only thing I'm going to point out is that here's the operators that we've looked at so far. We've looked at unary plus and minus. We've now just introduced that's a exclamation point. Oh, I can zoom in. Sorry. Magic of technology. And you can see that those are very high precedence. We've seen times, divide, remainder or modulo. We've seen plus and minus. We've seen comparisons. And we've seen equality, specific comparisons of equality or not equality. And then down here we have and as well as or. Okay? And then we've seen equals. So those are the ones we've seen so far. There's a bunch of other operators you can see on this page that we're going to get to. It's good to just understand these. If you knew the precedence, for example, of logical and is less than the comparisons, less than and so forth, or has lower precedence than them, then you know when we go back and show that last expression I wrote, well, you know that the and has lower precedence than less than greater than or less than, and therefore you know it will essentially will group like this, where we will first determine whether this is true and this is true, and then we will and them together afterwards because of the lower precedence of that. One thing not to obsess about is memorizing precedence. Or, you know, I've seen actually good C programmers who do just have the precedence chart like taped to the wall next to their screen. I have seen that at people that I think very well of who are very good programmers. And that's essentially because they're trying to just remove a few parentheses from their text. If you're not sure, certainly look it up, but it's also okay for clarity to add parentheses when you're like, I'm not sure exactly what's happening. I'm going to make sure these parentheses. Now, there will be people that look down on you, C pros who think that if you put an extra parenthesis, you're doing something wrong. You should ignore those people. They're just negative. Okay, so that's that. Let's go back to sheet 4 here. So there is precedence, and we just looked at this. And this is easy to find. Basically, you just Google C precedence. And we'll put it in our own notes that we're developing as well. Okay, so we got through all this stuff. Why are we doing all this stuff? Well, we're finally going to do something a little bit new today, which is now we're going to learn how to make decisions. And we'll look at a little bit of real code here. All code that's interesting makes decisions, conditionally executes pieces of code. Straight line code isn't that interesting, so let's talk about how that's done. It's done mostly with our friend a new keyword called if, which you've seen in virtually every piece of code that you've written of some kind. And if in C looks something like this. If some expression, and if that expression is true, then what we're going to do is conditionally execute the statements within these braces. So this is statement one, let's say, statement two, etc. When we put these curly braces around something, that's called a compound statement. That's just saying it's a bunch of statements are in there, and if we go into that compound statement, we're going to execute those statements. So that's pretty simple. If the expression is true, then execute the compound statement. And of course, that is recursive. In other words, that compound statement can contain more if statements and other pieces of code like that. So this is the basis of conditional execution. Now, let's look at some code now. And in doing so, I'm going to zoom out again. Sorry. Is that a legible size, by the way? Everyone can read that in the back? Back can read that? Okay. And okay, so what will I do now? I'm going to get my chair, actually. Sorry, I'm going to get this chair. And let's look at a little bit of code. There'll be some simple examples, and we'll build towards examples that aren't so simple. And I will switch this. Okay, let's look at control one. Okay, so here is some code. It's not too exciting. Let's figure out what we think the final values of x and y are going to be. Everybody take 20 seconds and figure that out. So if I run this program and then I show you the values of x and y, what are the values going to be? So we just, of course, with our let's just do this one together. If our C abstract machine starts at the top here, well, the first statement it hits, of course, these just tell the language to allocate space, define space, and make x and y available in memory somewhere. So we have two variables, x and y, so each of them are 4 bytes. So we have 8 bytes somewhere in memory we can play with. This assigns 11 to x. This assigns 0 to y. Then we get here, and we say, and then we evaluate this expression. The expression is just x greater than 10. When we evaluate that, that's going to give a value of 1, or true, because 11 is greater than 10, which means we're going to then conditionally assign y to 1. And therefore, if we output the values of x and y, we'll see 11 for x and then 1 for y. So we evaluate this expression, and then because it's true, we start executing our C instruction pointer goes into here and executes the code within these braces. So let's just go ahead and run this. I have this little program that kind of runs these fragments of code. And I have to remember all the flags that I gave it so I can run it correctly. Yeah, and then what that does is actually take that code, throw it into a full main, like a full C program, and then at the end prints the variable values. We'll look at, by the end of today, we'll be looking at just full C programs instead of these fragments, but for now, we'll live with this. Okay, any questions about that? Hopefully that's fairly straightforward. Now, there is a slight different form of this. If you have single line ifs, you don't have to have the curly braces. So for example, you'll see this in C code all the time. It's just a slight convenience, if expression statement one. Okay? But you have to be careful when you use it. Let's look at an example that isn't so careful. Oh, this is before we get to that, sorry. So remember what I just said, but then we're going to look at this example. So now you're going to tell me, look at this code, and you're going to look at it very carefully, because in your life, if you program a lot of C, you will make this mistake. There is a mistake in this code. And so now the question for you, which is a perfect kind of exam question, is what will the values of X and Y, if we print them out at the end of this program running, what will they be? So why doesn't everybody just think about it for 30 seconds? I'll start my stopwatch. 30 seconds. Feel free to talk to the people next to you. And, you know, if you don't know each other, you could introduce yourselves. If you know each other and don't like each other, you can move. But just talk for 30 seconds. All right, good enough. That's actually 45 seconds. So this is what it sounds like to me, by the way, up here. So it's very unsatisfying, but it sounds exciting because you're actually talking to people. So what is going on in this code? First of all, we do this, x equals 5. That looks great. Then we do this, y equals 0. That looks great. So x is 5, y is 0. And then we get to the bug. The bug in this program is that instead of using a comparison operator, which is equal equals, we just use assignment. Now, in C, assignment is an operator, and an operator, assignment operator just returns the value, which the value of that expression is the value on the right side of the operator, which is value 10. So if I have code that says if 10, am I going to execute this piece of code inside of here? I am, because in C, any non-zero value is true. So this code, what does it do? What are the final values of x and y going to be? What's x going to be? 10, because we just assigned it to 10. And then what's y going to be? Well, it's going to be 1, because we conditionally executed this code. This is a very common mistake. You'll see it all the time. Be very wary of it. Let's make sure what I said is true by running it. And indeed, it comes out as 10 and 1. And of course, if we wanted to behave probably like what we wanted to there, what we would do is change it to equals equals, and then you would see that we get 5 and 0 like we might expect, because x doesn't equal 10. In fact, why that's particularly insidious, I think I've been thinking about this in explaining this, is when you read it, you say if x equals 10. That's how a human being reads it, but it's not correct. That's saying if x is assigned 10, then, you know, and this would have been, of course, solved if they'd used a different assignment operator, like something like this or something like that, but they don't, so you're stuck. Okay? So we'll leave it like that so some other people can enjoy it. Any questions about that? Already getting into trouble. Let's get into some more trouble. Okay. Again, let's do the same thing. Discuss this piece of code. What are the values of x, y, and z going to be at the end? And I will give you 45 generous seconds this time to discuss it and think about it. All right, who feels like they know what's going on in this code? Who feels like they know? Why is this code a little bit misleading? Somebody. Yeah, great. So this is a perfectly valid program. It looks like what the user, the programmer wants is for both y and z to be conditionally executed. Unfortunately, because there are no braces, curly braces is what we'll call those, what this really executes like is like this. And so when we execute this program, it's going to set z equals to 2. Now, of course, if you have a good editor, it kind of won't let you do that. When you hit tab, it'll say, please, it won't move it over, because it knows that, you know, for example, when I hit tab in Emacs, it says that's where that should be. So I have to space it over and tell Emacs it's wrong. And then we could, of course, run this and see that z, in fact, does end up at 2, even though it looks like z should only be 2 if x were greater than 10, which it's not. Yeah, the y is. So, for example, if we, set this to 11, then y would get set to 1 there. Yeah, so this executes, the way we've done this right now, the way we want this code, without the braces, this is what it essentially behaves like. Good question. Okay, any questions about that? So be careful. Generally, one way to deal with this is just always use braces, but you will see a lot of code because people want to make code concise, and there's good reasons to make code concise. Why do you want to make code concise and small on the page? What's the value of that? Why would I say that's a good idea? Certainly good programmers do that. In fact, good programmers generally write in this much what most of us write in this much. So why is that? Why do you want to make codes kind of small? What are some reasons? There's many reasons, but what are some? efficiency, great. That's what I said earlier, and that can be true. Here, it won't matter if you put braces. It might be a human efficiency thing. Somebody's listening. I love it. So the efficiency is a little bit of a human one. You didn't have to type two characters, but when C actually that turns it into a program, it's not going to execute any differently. So it's actually not faster. So I guess I lied earlier. How is it advantageous to a programmer if I maybe make the code smaller? Why is that advantageous? Maintainability, like the code, I can see it all on the page, right? If like I have a function and I can fit into a page, I can see it. If it doesn't fit in a page, like if it's a really big piece of code, it's hard to look at it for a human, so there's reasons for it to be concise like that. It could be efficiency in other cases. This one isn't one. And in general, what you want to do, you want your code to be as readable as possible. That's a goal of any programmer, readability. And in some cases, less code becomes more readable. Now, sometimes people make things very, very, very dense, and it becomes less readable, and you should avoid that. Okay, so that's our third example. Let's look at a fourth example. Oh, this is just a new construct. Sometimes, let's just go ahead and switch screens for a second. Okay, this is moving on to page 5 here of our notes. And what page 5 is telling us is sometimes we want to, say, have an opportunity to do something else. So the way we do that is we have an else keyword here. So if the expression is true, do this stuff in this compound statement. If otherwise, do these things. That's not too surprising. So let's just look at a piece of code. This piece of code, is it too bright in here for the code, or is that okay? Can you kind of deal with that? Basically, I'm going to say, please deal with it, because I don't know how to switch the lighting. So I guess I shouldn't ask that question. In any case, you can imagine how this code works. It works basically like you would think it would work. If x is greater than 10, then it'll set y to 1 and do whatever else is within those braces. Otherwise, it'll set z equals to 2. And so you can see x is 15 here, so y will get set to 1, and z will come out as 0. So that's an else. You'll see that all the time in code. You see, you've probably already seen it many times. That's not too surprising. And then if you want to have a long string of options, this is a very common idiom. For example, if I want x, if x is less than 5 to do something, but if it's greater than 5 and less than 10, do something else, or if it's greater than 10 but less than 20, do something else, otherwise do something else, I can just string together if and else ifs just like this. Of course, you could do that in a different way. You could nest all those if-else's within there, but this is just such a very common paradigm that you'll see this all the time. So because x is 18, the way this will evaluate in our model of C is we'll come to this expression. We'll say, is x less than 5? No. So it'll skip this line of code. It'll go here and say, it'll evaluate x less than 10. That'll be false as well, or 0. And then it'll come here and say, is x less than 20? And it is, because it's 18. So it'll set y equal to 3 and then jump out of there and be done. So y would be 3 when this is done, and x, of course, would be 18 because we haven't changed it. Okay, so that's if and then else if, and you can string together long bits of those. Okay, so let's look at just a couple more things. I'm just going to preview. Oh, great. Okay, cool. This is a cool example, and I'm going to let you stare at it for a little bit. Okay. So why don't you just, this is a great one to stare at. So let's stare at that and stare at it for a little bit longer. So you have to talk to people about this one because it's pretty strange. I haven't explained anything about it, but what I want you to do is look at it and then tell me, what the final output of x is, of y is, and the variable we've named output. Okay, and let's take like a minute, minute and a half. Just really think through it. If you have a piece of paper, by the way, sometimes, it's good to sketch. I can only think on paper, even though I work on computers. Somehow I grew up before them, and I can think on paper. Feel free to use paper or whatever form you use to think through what this code you think it might do. Okay, so let's talk through this one. First, what we notice is this is a, we have a logical and between here, okay? And the associativity of and is left to right, actually, is something that we need to know when we have an and. We started kind of, so what we start here is with this, let's just go through this code. X equals 9, Y is 1, and output is 0. So then we ask, is this statement true? Now, is this statement true? No. In fact, right away when you look at just this part of it, you know that it's not going to be true, because is X equal to 10? No, it's equal to 9. And in fact, because if you have an and as your operator, and you have X and Y, if you see one of them is not true, then you know that the statement's going to be not true in the end. You don't even have to look at the other one. Now, the interesting thing about this piece of code is, in fact, if the left side of an and in a C expression is not true, the right side won't even be evaluated. That's something called short-circuiting. I'll write that down just in a more formal setting. So it's called a short circuit, and you will see this in C code all the time, where we say if X and Y, blah, blah, blah. If our model of C executing comes down to this expression and it's evaluating it, if it sees that X is false, it will not evaluate Y in order to, like, go through the motions. It knows that it's going to be false and it will stop. So that's what that short circuit is. It's if X in this case is false, then we know that just by the way logic works, that X and Y must be false, and therefore we don't evaluate Y. Now, in our code example, okay, that's a short circuit. So I'll leave that up there for a second. So in our code example, what that means is we don't evaluate the right side over here, and the right side here, it was an assignment, where we said y equals y plus 1, where we would take 1, add it to y, the value of y, which is 1, add it to 1, and set y equal to that, so that would increment y to 2. Of course, that would be true. 2 is true, right? But 2 and 0 is still false, and then output, of course, isn't going to get set to 1. So when we run this, what is y's final output going to be? What's its final value going to be? It's going to be 1. All right, let's see if that's true. That was 6, I believe. And there it is. Magic. Oh, doctor, I like that. Nobody calls me that. Just call me Ramsey.
Dr.
Okay. Just call me, hey, buddy. Dr. Buddy. Yeah, great. So this is, no, it's not. It just means that we're going left to right, and that's how we're evaluating it. And this is defined and used in the language. The kind of the bigger question is why would we want this? Why do we, in fact, care about this? I mean, at some level, you don't care. But where you do care is sometimes what you'll do is on the left, you'll say, hey, is this thing going to be safe to do? And then if it's true, you'll say, and then do this thing with that maybe would have been unsafe if it hadn't been safe to, you hadn't done the check first. We'll see that idiom in code. Here, this would be a weird way to write this expression. Like, this would be strange to write it like this, but you just have to know that when you look at C code, it's assumed that this expression will be evaluated in that manner. And, of course, you can do the same thing with OR. If you see a true value on the left, you know you're done and you won't evaluate the rest of the expression, because the right side, you don't care if it's 0 or 1, if the left side of an OR is 1. So that's short-circuiting. It's a bit of a detail. We can kind of forget about it, but I just wanted to show you because it's kind of weird. Yeah. No, OR is the other one. So you can short-circuit an OR, and the way that would work is if I did this, then basically if X evaluated to 10, then I would know at that point that this is going to be true, and therefore I wouldn't do the right side either. So either and or can, but they have it has different truth value. Good question. Other questions? Yeah. No. Is there a non-short circuit version of that operator? And the answer is no, you're just stuck with it. Oh, those are good questions. I have not talked about a single thing like that. If you have to assign a type, all variables in C have types. And so so far we've only seen one type, which is an integer. Now there is a kind of a generic type that we'll talk about later, like a void or a void star type, and we'll use that later, but that's still a type. It won't compile, which we haven't talked about compilation yet, but yes, the program will not even, you won't even be able to run the program. C is not a strongly typed language. We'll talk more about types and type systems a little bit maybe next time. But yes, it's not like Python or JavaScript or any of those languages where basically you just barf on the inside of an editor and it runs. It does have a compiler, and the odds of you generating correct C are much lower than maybe some of those languages that you might see otherwise. Yes, so you have to, there's no way to, there are some kind of more modern languages, like has anyone used Go, for example? Anybody use Go? Yeah, not that widely used. Like, for example, Go says, hey, I can write x equals 10, and then the compiler will figure out, because this is 10 over here, that this must be an integer. Sorry? Cache does that? Yeah, I don't know what cache is. Yeah. Does that make me a bad person or a good one? Yeah. And then the white space, great question, right. So we can do all sorts of things here. White space isn't particularly meaningful. We could do this. Of course, you would get fired once people see that. But white space is not meaningful in any particular way. Just that we need white space, for example, to separate keywords and identifiers and literals. I mean, all the things we've been talking about, like int and whatever, their white space is important to separate them. It's not always important. For example, we could do this. And you can see there's cases where it makes sense. Basically, it's if the language can understand what you mean, then the white space isn't important. But if it can't, then it becomes important. And so hopefully those are great questions. Thank you. I'm going to write that down so next time I talk about it. Next time means like, well, next time I teach this class, white space. Hint required. Thank you. Okay, so that's if. Now there is one other type of control statement, other decision-making statement, which is called a switch statement. And we're going to skip that for now. It's not that different from if. Usually it's used in a case where you have a lot of different options, that like if a variable can equal a bunch of different options, you might use a switch statement instead of a if-else. It's a little bit cleaner, but it's equivalent, and you could understand it probably. Okay, so we're at 50 minutes in. We've learned how to make a decision. The decision we make now is to take a break. Let's take that break, and we'll come back in, like, say, 7-8 minutes, and then we'll get going again. Okay, thanks. Good questions.